Welcome to a special edition of Cultivating Kapwa, Conversations with Lenny Strobel. This is Olivia Sawi, producer and co-host of the podcast. This episode, which we're calling Episode Zero, was actually inspired by a conversation with my mom. She listened to both episodes that have been released, which is a big deal to me for various reasons, and had some really great feedback. She said this, "If I had no clue what decolonization or who Lenny was, I'd be a little confused when listening to the first episode." It made perfect sense. My mom has been exposed to decolonization and Ati Lenny because I've been involved with the Center for Babylon Studies for almost 10 years, but she was thinking about those who have much less of a knowledge base. We want this podcast to be accessible to as many people as possible, which is why we went back and created this episode, Episode Zero. Expanding on this thought, a brief note before we begin. Even though this podcast was created with Filipino Americans, Filipinos in the diaspora, and Filipinos in the motherland in mind, we feel that the knowledge and experiences shared in the entirety of this podcast can benefit people of all lineages. That being said, I'm going to read an excerpt from Joanna LaTorre's thesis that she wrote for her master's degree in social work. Jo is a fellow core member of the Center for Babylon Studies and will be a co-host in a future episode. Her thesis is titled, Decolonizing and Reindigenizing Filipinos in Diaspora. And this excerpt will give an introduction to some of her topics, written specifically for a university setting. I've omitted her citations, but you can find her thesis online. This is a lot, so hang in there. Colonized people experience a unique set of psychological and physical consequences that result from the process of colonization, including physical, spiritual, and epistemic violence. Though the process of colonization has been largely romanticized and given an innocuous, if not beneficial, position in the history books. Harms due to colonization include resource depletion, displacement, extraction of wealth from communities and landscapes, coerced labor and the loss of people, mass murder, and culture. A growing body of knowledge has begun to explicate the psychological harms of colonization as observed in descendants of colonized peoples, such as historical trauma, colonial trauma response, and colonial mentality. Decolonization includes defining the impacts and grieving and harms of colonization from the perspective of the Filipino, instead of the accounts from the colonial perspective. Decolonizing, in part, consists of uncovering and retelling history from the perspective of the colonized. This process draws attention to the physical and epistemic violence, or the imposed denigration of a worldview endured by colonized Filipinos, and gives a more accurate account of history. Examining the uncomfortable truths about the ways in which ancestors were complicit with colonization is also a part of this process. Indigenizing includes learning and practicing the ancestral knowledge and ways, particularly regarding connection with the land, ancestors, and the spirit world. It also includes learning the arts and healing practices of pre-colonial Filipinos. Wow, that was a lot, even for me. In order to explore and examine these concepts in a different way, here is our host, Janilyn Amipig, speaking about decolonization.
Decolonization is not just a study. It's not a form of study, and it's more than just a process. Also, it's a way of life and also a time that we live in. And it's important for us to understand the context of decolonization being a time in relationship to the time in which our ancestors experienced colonization. And when we talk about pre-colonial times, and then also we can talk about the future, right? So if this is a time of decolonization, then we can also think that the time in the future in which our descendants will live maybe a time that's already decolonized, if we can imagine that far ahead of ourselves and think about that possibility. And so the idea that we root in around decolonization is that we are pulling apart, taking apart the understandings of self that have been shaped by the world around us that make us believe that the colonial way, the colonial beliefs, that colonial constructs of life are what will shape us and what will hold us in our life's journey. And so the tie to this work of decolonizing is very reflective of the time that we are living in. In particular, we find ourselves here in the time of April 2020, in which in the United States, also what we call a part of Turtle Island, the North Americas, we think about the time of this virus and COVID and the pandemic in which we have been experiencing as a peoples on across the globe, and the ways in which it has created an opportunity and a window for us to see colonization malfunctioning, breaking down. And we can be an understanding of what we believe are essentials now, right? So we use that word a lot in this time, the idea of essentials. What is essential to our survival? What is essential to our vitality and our way of life? Who is in service of that? Who maintains that for us? Who are those that labor and that live to serve the well-being of all of us, not just of themselves, but that their work is crucial and central to our survival and our way of living and well-being. This work is all about remembering. And so we often in the work write remembering as re-membering as a way of really talking about the process of putting ourselves back together again, taking the fragments of ourselves that we're digging up and excavating and putting them back together, and that this time that we're living in is allowing us to do that in more intentional ways, in ways that feel a lot more supported by community, by the access to knowledge, by the ability to communicate with each other about our learnings and about what it is that we are uncovering, by being able to be in relationship with and connection to our motherland and with the peoples of our motherland, particularly the indigenous peoples and the peoples who are on the ground working for the preservation of our culture and our ways of life that are not shaped by capitalism, white supremacy, and patriarchy. This is the work, and this is the life, and this is the time of decolonization. It is that remembering. It's putting back together the pieces of our understandings pre-colonial, and also alongside it shaping a future and existence that will be centered on our liberation and centered on the ability for our descendants to live in a good way with each other. And the beautiful thing about it is that though in order for us to get here to this place where many, many people from different lands and backgrounds are finding themselves circling with each other to be in resistance of colonization, to fight these constructs of oppression, and to create the rhetoric, create the foundations of resistance that will allow our descendants then to stand upon those foundations and platforms, those roots, and truly live in a decolonial way, in a way that is not powered and centered on colonization's hold on us. And that's going to take a lot of work on our part, you know? And it's important for us to really, really think about what it means for us as a people to understand how the generations before us had to live a particular way to survive colonization in order for us to be in the age of decolonization. When I think about even just the three generations of my family that is here, actually four generations of my family that is here in the United States that came to the Kingdom of Hawaii and laid down home roots there for second and third generation to grow in. I think about how my parents feel to me, the generation prior to me, they feel to me the most colonized, the most connected to the belief systems, you know, of the colonizer. They're so tied to Catholicism in a really deep way that also breeds a lot of white supremacy and patriarchal notions. I also see how tied they are to capitalism and how their value of themselves and also of us and the ability for us to survive has been really rooted in capital, and how success for them has really been shaped by that American dream that really is built on the notions of capitalism being what says we are worthy, that measures our worth in relationship to society and the world in which we live in. And then I think about my grandmother, who actually was the one that preserved so much of the culture. And also, you know, my parents had it too, but they were very much invested in maintaining a status and a way of being that was tied to a colonistic way. My grandmother, on the other hand, had her, this is on my maternal side, she had her way of doing this work that and way of living that still drew back to her roots in the Philippines in a lot of accords. Even in her beliefs, though she prayed, you know, through Catholicism, the prayers of Catholicism, there was still a lot of what, you know, the colonial world would call superstition, and a lot of practices that were also rooted in energetic divination. And she wouldn't even be a person to say that that was true, but the truth is she did. And I received those learnings from her because of it. And she helped to shape my beliefs in alongside the very strict ideas of a colonial upbringing that my parents were really working to raise me in. And so we can look at those generations that have been here in the United States, on Turtle Island, wherever you are in the diaspora. And if you can trace it even further, then it would be really beautiful to be able to trace your lineage in that way and be an understanding about the migrant patterns and how those migrant patterns and what brings folks to migrate in the first place, to be displaced from their homes, whether they believe it's forced or not. It is, there is like a indirect force that pushes them to migrate in order to be in service to the colonial way and the colonizer and the lands that have been colonized and the maintenance of their control over those indigenous lands. So this is where the thought is, and this is where we want to be in relationship to. Decolonization work is about tracing our lineage and understanding as much as we can. And if we cannot trace our lineage, that actually, because we are in the time of decolonization, where we have so much access to knowledge and we have so much access to these databases of understanding and histories and the ability to look at it from different perspectives and viewpoints more than we ever have. And we have so many folks who have been doing the deep work of digging for us, both in the academic sense and also like in the experiential sense. Like a lot of our comrades are on the ground working and living and understanding the importance of having close relations to our indigenous elders and our indigenous people and the young people that are still stewards of the land in which their ancestral origins, our ancestral origins, are rooted. And so the decolonization work is also about understanding our responsibility as we open up this window, these doors to remembering ourselves. As we put ourselves back together, we understand that those parts of ourselves are connected to many different peoples, and it's also connected to land. And so taking care of those relations is crucial also in decolonization work. This is your lifetime. This is the complexities of it all, is this like deep remembering. And when we take all those pieces and place them within ourselves, upon ourselves, then the next part of decolonization is not just about the remembering. It's not just about the like return to the indigenous. It's not about just that. It's also about making way for the future. So how do we pass these things on in a good way? How do we teach our young people to have the awareness and the accountability so that they can build agency, that they can empower themselves to really do the work of maintaining their liberation? And that is what we're doing here. This is what these conversations with Ataleni are really about. And we're just looking at it through the experience of one elder who really has invested in that from one place of being. But we hope that these exchanges with her will allow all of us to be in a position to do the work for ourselves in a good way. This is a part of her offering to the future, to our future descendants. You know, we have to be in a place where we are in understanding that someone's going to want to remember us in the future. We're going to be a part of someone's remembering. And will it be easy for them to do that? Will we have created a way for them to find us in a good way? You know, will we be able to create those foundations where they can find us all so that they don't have to work as hard and excavate as deeply as we have had to in this time of decolonization in the future? And so these conversations with Ataleni are an opportunity to think about that for ourselves, the work that we're doing, and to ask yourselves the same questions that we're asking her. And that is the hope, that this will be the work for our entire community here in the present time of and the age of decolonization, and also to support the future.
For a background of Ataleni, I'm going to read a couple of articles that have been written about her. First, her biography is seen on the Center for Babaylan Studies website. Leni Mendoza Strobel is Professor Emeritus of American Multicultural Studies at Sonoma State University. She is the author of Coming Full Circle, The Process of Decolonization Among Post-1965 Filipino Americans, and a book of her own, Words and Images to Honor the Babaylan. She is the editor of Babaylan, Filipinos and the Call of the Indigenous. This book is a collection of scholarly essays on primary land-based Babaylans in the Philippines, Kapwa psychology and Babaylan practice, Babaylan-inspired practices by Filipinos in the diaspora, as well as personal narratives on decolonization as a spiritual path. With S. Lily Mendoza as co-editor, she also published another anthology, Back from the Crocodile's Belly, Philippine Babaylan Studies and the Struggle for Indigenous Memory. Her most recent publication is Glimpses, a Poetic Memoir, through the MDR Generator. An excerpt from a book of her own. Personal statement. If decolonization has taught us anything, it's this. Part of our own healings to no longer be the willing receptacle of these projections from the colonizer. What then becomes of us when we are emptied of colonial projections? I was reminded by a very wise woman mentor from India that my colonized self is only a sliver in the totality of my Filipino self. Yet temporarily it was necessary for the process of decolonization to take up time and space in the psyche in order to purge these projections so that I can come home full circle to the largeness of my own indigenous self. I use the term indigenous to refer to the self that has found its place, its home in the world. Emptied of projections of inferiority, third world, undeveloped, uncivilized, exotic and primitive, and modernizing, it is the self capable of conjuring one's place and growing roots through the work of imagination, reframing history, and retelling the Filipino story that centers our history of resistance, survival, and regeneration. An excerpt from Babaylan, Filipinos and the Call of the Indigenous. Our primary Babaylans and Babaylan-inspired Kapwa are still with us. In land-based tribal communities in the Philippines, they perform their roles as they have done for thousands of years. Carl Gaspar calls them organic mystics. In the diaspora, he calls them mystics in exile. Among Filipinos in the homeland and in the diaspora, decolonizing Filipinos claim the Babaylan spirit as an inheritance that is available to all who wish to follow an indigenous Filipino spiritual path. The second article I'm going to read is titled Dr. Lenny Strobel's Journey of Self-Rediscovery, written by Eunice Barbara C. Novio, published in the Filipino newspaper The Inquirer. She is a professor, an eminent scholar, author, activist, a Babaylan-inspired woman, and a lot more. But she calls herself a settler and a colonized person, and she has embarked on a long and arduous journey to unlearn 500 years of colonial influence, which had shaped her consciousness and identity. This is the process of decolonization, a word that did not circulate very much in the Filipino community in the United States in the early 90s. When I was decolonizing, I became aware of the insidious and unconscious messages I was internalizing: our inferiority, our brownness, our need to be improved and corrected, our need to be whitened. For a while, I even bought whitening products for my face, she says. The journey of Dr. Elenita Faye Lenny Luna Mendoza Strobel, professor at the American Multicultural Studies Department of Sonoma State University and project director of the Center for Babaylan Studies, is far from over. Growing up in Pampanga, where Clark U.S. Air Base was, Strobel was exposed to whiteness among the Filipinos and in her family. They listened to American songs, watched American movies, and everything white and good was American. She explains that Bacolor, Pampanga was the capital of the Spanish colonial government. Its lush environment attracted not only Spanish officials but also members of the Spanish nobility and the monarchs of Southeast Asia, making it their favorite vacation spot. Kampampangans cooked various foods for these guests, and that made them become well-known as cooks. Strobel's maternal grandfather was the son of Joaquin Luna, the brother of Antonio and Juan, making her the great-great-grandniece of the famous Luna brothers. However, she knows little about her paternal side. Lucila Salonga Apusinang, my paternal grandmother, is my magical grandmother. Widowed early, she raised 7 children, all by herself. She put the lighted end of the cigarette in her mouth. What is more magical than that? She laughs. To remember Apusinang, Strobel planted a honeysuckle vine that reminds her of the Sambuguita, which she and her Apu string together into garlands. The honeysuckle creeps onto the deck of the second floor of her home. The vine is now 30 years old. In 1983, she married a white engineer from Montana and immigrated to the United States. Like all immigrants, Strobel was not spared the feeling of alienation in a new country. She sought therapists, hoping this could help her. The therapist did not know anything about me and my background. I had to tell her about the Spanish and American colonization. It was a one-way process, and it did not work for me. Strobel decided to start graduate school to replace her expensive therapy sessions. She took 2 PhD courses at University of California in Berkeley while doing her master's program in interdisciplinary studies at Sonoma State University before proceeding to her doctoral studies. There she met Dr. Virgilio Enriquez, the father of Psicología Young Filipino, and a Filipino visiting professor at UC Berkeley. Attending sessions with Dr. Enriquez as he explained the Filipino core values like loob, pakikipagkapwa, pakikiramdam, Strobel realized that it was the narrative she was looking for. It helped her in developing her ideas about the cultural identity of Filipino Americans who came to the United States after 1965. But her interest in decolonization and cross-cultural studies were discouraged even by some Filipino scholars. Thus, Strobel realized that the psyche of Filipinos, even in the academe, was already replete with white love and oblivious to the epistemic and psychic violence of colonization. In 1996, her dissertation for the University of San Francisco International and Multicultural Education course entitled The Process of Decolonization for Post-1965 Filipino Americans became the most outstanding doctoral student dissertation. In 2001, Giraffe published it under the title Coming Full Circle, The Process of Decolonization Among Post-1965 Filipino Americans. This book is still in print, and Strobel is still receiving emails from readers who are appreciative of her work. Decolonization helped Strobel reconnect with her Kampampangan roots. A large part of it was reclaiming the Babaylan spirit. She explains that Babaylan is a Visayan term which means healer, mediator between spiritual realms, counselor, and therapist. The Babaylan is one of the 4 pillars of the indigenous community, along with Datu, Panday, Smith, Bayani, Warrior. In the Philippines, indigenous communities still practice shamanism and continue the role of the Babaylan. This person is called Mumbaki, Baylan, Katalonan, Dawak, etc. We never say we're a Babaylan because a Babaylan needs to be a part of a community that affirms and confirms that role for you. In diaspora, we have lost a lot of our indigenous practices, Strobel explains. In 2009, along with other Filipinas, Strobel founded the Center for Babaylan Studies, which focuses on Filipino indigenous knowledge systems and practices, including Sikolohiyong Filipino, and is meant to be a place of learning, knowing, and embracing the sacred outside of the confines of the ivory tower. The center holds workshops, retreats, concerts, and forums exploring Filipino indigenous cultures and practices and their relevance to Filipinos in the diaspora. CFBS has also begun to connect with other indigenous groups in North America. Reconnecting with our indigenous soul means that we come to understand that our fear of uncertainty and anxiety comes from a separation from creation. Land, animals, trees, all non-human creation, and our own displacement from our places of origin. Our sense of disconnection and separation is the evidence of how disconnected we are from our sense of kapwa. This sense of kapwa is called interbeing, intersubjectivity in English. So many of us are devout Catholics or Christians, but our relationship with God should not only be transcendent, but also immanent. That means that we recognize the sacredness of all of creation. All is sacred, Dr. Lenny Strobel says. Again, that was a lot. It is my hope that this episode helped give some context and background to our podcast. If anything, I hope it generates more questions and reflections and helps you begin to examine your own personal story. Thank you for listening to our special edition episode 0 of Cultivating Kapwa, Conversations with Lenny Strobel. Special thanks to my co-producer, Anna Erin Sawi, and to Astrologic for letting us use their songs, Here and Now, and Invisible Chains. You can listen to this podcast at centerforbabaylanstudies.org under the Engage tab or on Podbean and Stitcher. Keep checking every Sunday morning for new episodes. We'll see you next time. Have a great day.